Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday morning. It's the 18th of December. I'm Joe Donahue, and we have a terrific panel before us. Can anybody hear anything? Hello.
I can hear. Hello. I can hear, and I have something to say.
That's so unusual.
I have an apology to make. That's even more
unusual. Wow.
Last week on the show, when you weren't here, Joe, we were talking about vitamin B12, and I had read some article that that it was not a food source. You couldn't eat it, get it by food. Of course you can, and I misspoke, and I got two letters. I apologized profusely for getting it wrong. You can get it from a whole range of foods, I think it's just best to own up to one's mistakes.
Well, now I'm curious. What do you eat to get B12?
You could get fish.
Oh, fish.
Fish. Oh, yeah. You could steak, according to my doctor, and other.
Ooh, fun sources. It's not like eating kale or something.
Yeah. So my doctor, I was there for an appointment yesterday, and he looked at me, and he said, I said, can you do it? He said, you can get it from food, but you don't eat any of those foods. I said, like what? He said, like steak and fish and this and that. And I said, oh, no, I eat those. How often? I said, every day.
Do we introduce everybody? Hey, yeah. Alan, WAMC's Alan Chartek is here. Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeo is here. Chief of Capital New York's Albany Bureau, Jimmy Vielkind, will be with us at the half hour. So we have lots to talk about this morning. And let us begin with discussing the budget deal reprieve in the sense that the reprieve being the reprieve in the partisan bickering. And in this article from the New York Times, something odd happened in Washington on Tuesday. The Senate advanced a two-year bipartisan budget deal that will now surely be sent to the president for a signature later this week without waiting for a cliff, a chasm, a deadline, or a shutdown to force its hand. Just like that, declaration sounded in Washington that the city almost seemed to be working again.
Who's Cliff?
Yeah. Who's Cliff, and we want it back.
And yet Republican leaders are saying, yeah, we're so eager to show we can get along and work together that we've passed a bad document.
So what does it prove?
What does it prove?
Yeah, they read polls.
Yeah, I think the Republicans really were hurt by the shutdown. They're hearing from everyone that we want the government to work, and so this is doing business as usual is for them, meaning House Republicans especially. It's a loss. It's a face down, don't you think?
Oh yeah, no, I just have the sense that that the Republicans are facing reality, and that even though they've been scared to death of the Tea Party types who end up coming out in huge numbers in droves during the primaries, they understand full well that they've got to put their feet down and not look like a bunch of wusses. Is that the right word? Mm-hmm. That is the
just got away with it. Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that they got it. I think the Democrats have given up a lot, but whether they really wanted it, these guys are tricky, so you don't know. So, for example, the unemployment benefits.
Yeah.
They say, oh, this is terrible. We can't have double what we have. But do they really want double what they have, or do they want to blame it on the other guys?
Well, McConnell is one of the Republican leaders who is saying, yeah, it's going to pass. I can't stop it, but I hate it. I think he's doing it definitely for
he's got a primary.
Yeah.
Very tough primary.
He's got an election coming up. And yet, some of the points they're making are interesting to look at that. For one thing, it's the measure is stopping some spending cuts that have been in effect for 2 years and have actually saved government money, and we've all survived it. And he's saying, why are we eliminating these? I don't know. Once again, it's because we're doing budgets by expediency rather than sitting down and looking at the whole idea of how you're supposed to spend money and where's the best way for it to be spread out.
Yeah. They both sides say that, except it's they have very different ideas about what that is.
Yeah.
It's an awful situation. But I don't know about you guys, but I'm encouraged by this.
Bad news.
No, I mean, I think that there's a big difference, I've said it before, I say it again, between policy, in other words, running the government, politics, mm-hmm. which is an entirely different, how to get yourself elected, which is an entirely different thing. I think the Democrats really want the Tea Party types to get more and more power, because I think it turns off the American
strategy.
Well, I mean, for example, if Mitch McConnell loses to a right-wing candidate, you know, basically the head of the case, are they in better shape or worse shape? They're obviously better shape.
Yeah. Well, you know, and if I were Obama, I would also be worried about, I get 2 years off, but at that end of the 2 years comes the wrath of years of being plugged up into a budget they don't like. I think it's going to be hellish when that happens.
Well, you know, yeah, but I think certain things have been done. For example, the nuclear option has changed everything.
Yeah, the filibuster
changed everything.
Yeah,
now they are in a much better place. Secondly, I sense that Obama is now figuring out, maybe with Podesta coming on and all the rest of mm-hmm. it, former Clinton, you know, chief of staff, that, you know, there are times you got to fight. My favorite day. I was sitting, I think, in the Steuben Club when Hillary Clinton came on and said it was a vast
right-wing conspiracy.
I said to myself, that's great. That's my team at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good that there's a fight going on. You don't want people to take a namby-pamby point of view. Right. That's why Reagan did so well.
Right.
There's a, this is to your point, Alan, of this being encouraging, and certainly the White House has said that, and Dan Pfeiffer, who's the president's senior advisor, said that the year is ending with some real positive sign, warning against a new era of compromise, but still saying that the year is ending with a positive sign. The question is whether it will be a turning point that will clear the way for arguments on long-stalled issues like Medicare, the tax code, and immigration, or simply be an asterisk in the history books. To President Obama and his strategists, the cross-aisle accord offers what one called green shoots of hope. The next year may turn out better than this year, along with the change in filibuster rules, making it easier to confirm nominees, as we were talking about. The White House sees prospects for progress, even if limited. So
if you take two bills I'll give you that I think have a very good chance, the farm bill, which everybody on both sides of the aisle knows you have to do. You have to do a farm bill. Can you imagine if a gallon of milk costs $8? You know,
that's not going to help anybody's election chances.
No. And then the immigration bill. Because in the
you
same—
You think immigration?
Oh, yeah, I do. Because I think in the same way that that the Republicans, for example, learned their lesson, about holding up government, they also have the same understanding after looking at the presidential election that they're not going to win again unless they can have some kind of a policy that they can brag about. Look, it's not that no Republicans ever going to get Hispanic votes. Chris Christie did extremely well in New Jersey among Hispanics. Mm-hmm. So people project into a candidate they find to be their friend, whatever they want to. But I think they know they have to do something on that one, too. So I say those two would be good. And, of course, no matter what the outcome of those bills would be, Obama will get the credit.
And then look at the list of bills that you would like to be considered and probably won't. Gun control would be on there, or regulation of some sort would be on the top of my list. I can't see that happening.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I couldn't agree with you about the outcome more. Yeah. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I can't see that one. What else? What else has been considered and hoped for in the past year, and we haven't?
Well,
come
tax
close to
reform.
It. Yep.
Now that's an interesting one.
Yep. Revise that.
That's a very interesting one because I think Americans have come to the point where they think, you know, it's not fair mm-hmm. that some people are getting better breaks than others. And when you hear about a major corporation in our area paying not one penny in taxes,
right.
or when you hear...
the last presidential election, when many of the candidates, not just the two major ones, let their releases their tax forms become public. And none of them, of course, committed crimes. I'm not saying that. But the vastly different rate that these all rich men, but the rate they paid was so different that it was shocking.
Yeah, no.
And we haven't heard much about that.
So both parties have indicated they're real interested in tax reform. But I wanted you to know that K Street, where all the lobbyists come from, that's really the only thing they care about. That's what it is. These are all representatives of these corporations and these individuals. And as soon as those words get out of anybody's mouth, out they come like,
Banking and Wall Street regulation is also something that's been much talked about, not much done. And what's happening with the Volcker Rule? The last I heard that was due.
That's happening. That's going
to
happen.
Yeah, that's I can see Congress acting in some way on that, too, to either weaken or I don't know, alter it.
I don't think... Oh, you mean once the SEC
does its thing?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. The banks, of course, are furious about this, but it's their own fault. Mm-hmm. And if there's one thing that Obama seems to be doing with his Justice Department and the others is to going after the bankers right now, immensely popular with the American people.
Yep.
And I think that's going to continue. And I don't know that the Senate, for example, right now is in any mood to let the Congress as a whole reform the Volcker, if they pass the Volcker Rule, you know, and they do that, and I think that's done, basically, then I doubt that the Congress is going to mess with that.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your input, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is with us. And newly joining the studio, Chief of Capital New York's Albany Bureau, Jimmy Vielkind. Good morning, Jimmy.
Morning, Joe.
Welcome to the conversation. You can join in on this conversation by emailing us at roundtable at wamc.org. We would love to hear from you. 1-800... I'm sorry.
I just asked you the other day if you ever said that out of context sometime.
Well, no, you know, you do it as it's a Vox Pop thing. You do it as a Vox Pop thing, and I look up there, but that's not...
I grew up in this area, so I still have the in my head burned in Mr. Shark talking 1-800-322-9262.
Good for you, Jimmy.
On my deathbed, I'll know. We got to call the BMC. What's the number? Oh, I know the number.
There is a testimonial to you, Rosemary, says, from Tony, who says,
Using
Carolyn Kennedy as an example for ambassadors is flawed because there aren't as many rock star types like her to go around. We need our people living in each foreign land being able to assist Americans abroad. Well, that's not exactly what you said abroad and being able to contact the foreign governments in a timely and culturally appropriate manner. I like
that. Well, she said she's agreeing with you in that they don't need the embassy.
Yeah,
they don't need large embassies.
The argument given for embassies is just that, you know, what about the foreign national? I'm in Bosnia. I need to be able to reach the U.S. embassy.
Sure.
Well, why? I call them. Why can't I call somebody someplace else? I know the times that you go to the
I know somebody and they're wired. That's
but it's a big, huge hassle and it's expensive. There's a huge, huge building in the middle of Sarajevo. You have to have to get into it is a hassle. You have to have an appointment. You have to have a police escort. You have to have an ID. It's not like I'm in trouble. Run to the embassy. That's in the movies. Doesn't happen.
Well, but okay, if there was an earthquake in Bosnia, what would you do? The United States government would move heaven and earth to get you an American citizen.
I would do the
safe,
same. I would do the same thing that my Bosnian friends did, Jimmy. That's just not right.
Well, I don't think.
If there's war,
I don't think you're right.
I was actually in Bosnia, in the Serb part of Bosnia, when the Kosovo bombing began. And I was teaching students, and the U.S. government issued a call to get out. All non-essential personnel had to get out. I was staying with Serb friends. I said, okay, what do you think? And they go, we have one more day. I was working at a university. So I said, no, I'm going to stay. And actually, as she drove me out, my Serbian friend drove me out of the danger area, there were American troops were going to come in and get me. I don't want this to be taken the wrong way because, if I were in Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan, I would sure be thinking differently. But that kind of, it's a policy, and they use the policy all the time, even when it's ridiculous and unnecessary, like strip searching. We're going to strip search everyone. No, that's not the way the policy should be. I did not need to be rescued. That was a waste of U.S. effort and money.
Well, you know, there are people who think they know better than you about this and who are interested in protecting. And if, God forbid, you would have been harmed or hurt.
Right. Then my family might be saying something different.
Yeah, right.
And I understand that. In an ideal world, that would be great. We live at a time when there is no money. There is no money to do everything we want. So I'm saying we need to take another look at how that money is being spent.
Well, there's a lot of money out there, and we spend it on all kinds of stupid ways. There was a piece in the paper this morning about a classified investigation. What was that classified document about the way in which we had interrogated
$40 million CIA report.
$40 million. That was actually the next story I wanted to talk about. Yeah.
That's fascinating. You have to get the background now, John.
The Senate Intelligence Committee has...
okay, well, shut up while he tells everybody, lets everybody else in on what we're talking about.
Give me the background, and then we'll go forward. The Senate Intelligence Committee has asked the CIA for an internal study done by the agency that lawmakers believe is broadly critical of the CIA's detention interrogation program, but was withheld from congressional oversight committees. The committee's request comes in the midst of a year-long battle with the CIA over the release of the panel's own exhaustive report about the program, one of the most controversial policies of the post-9/11 era. From the New York Times. $40 million.
And we, the American people, cannot see it all yet. I can say no more than that. I'm, you know, a huge proponent of transparency. Congress is rightly asking, what is the difference between what was publicly presented in Congress in a House hearing as that report and the report itself? Are there discrepancies? Is it the same thing? If it's the same thing, why can't we see it?
Right. And, you know, Senator Udall is doing what he does. Either the chairman or one of the top members of the Intelligence Committee has been talking about this, and I noticed that he basically disclosed that there is a different, that there are these competing reports at a
Correct.
Hearing the other day. So, you know, it's interesting on the state level you see the same kind of tension between executive and legislative branches. And, you know, we live in an era where lots of latitude has been afforded to the executive branch, particularly on matters of national security. And I say that as a normative statement. I don't say that with any judgment, because that is true since 9/11. And you know, it's been interesting a decade later, over a decade later, to see how our legislators are starting to respond and are starting to be more assertive in their oversight roles. And I suspect we'll continue to see the pendulum swing back.
Yeah, I say that that's a good thing. It's what the Constitution intends. I say that even in light of Benghazi, I think that oversight is needed there, that we don't have the whole story, even though it's been used in a political way that I cannot approve of. I mean, we should be looking at what the heck really did happen there and why it was presented to us the way it was. But without all of the politics, do you think we could manage that?
Here's one that wasn't so kind to you.
God, now you're going to bring me down.
It just says, you don't want anyone entering police custody by potentially having any contraband that could be used by them or introduced into the system. This is not a matter of they did it to her for security reasons. It should be done to everyone. If it isn't, money, weapons, and drugs will be introduced. Gary.
There, law enforcement does have a different view of this. I would like to understand it better than I do. I do not see why a diplomat who's, even if she's guilty of the worst thing we can say about her, underpaid her servant, had to be strip searched. What could she have been bringing in that would be so monstrously dangerous to our system?
Got it.
I guess that's that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss more issues and other stories. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Middletown Medical, now offering evening walk-in urgent care for children every weeknight until 9, plus evening sports physicals, middletownmedical.com. Unusual wedding rings and more in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield. A jewelry emporium providing traditional and non-traditional engagement, wedding, and anniversary rings for conventional and same-sex couples, unusualweddingrings.com. And Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York, davidsonbrothers.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Arimeo, and Jimmy Bielkind on the panel this morning. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about law firms getting in on the fun when it comes to fighting Moreland subpoenas. 16 is the number?
Yeah, I think we're up to 16 now. So I think we've spoken before, and your listeners know about this Moreland Commission, which was the Governor Andrew Cuomo convened panel to look at potential public corruption, and Cuomo sort of directed this toward the legislature. And one of the things that people have always scratched their heads about and sort of raised their eyebrows at is this idea that our state legislators are technically part-time legislators, that they can have outside jobs, and a lot of them are lawyers. And so the question becomes, well, okay, you're a lawyer. You work for, say, Goliath National Bank. Does your firm get money from them? Are you, as a legislator, carrying water for Goliath National Bank when you're voting on these bills? And so the commission basically asked all the law firms that employ legislators, who are your clients? What are these guys doing? What are they just what are they billing for? Are they actually earning their keep at your firm, or are you just giving them a ton of money to, I don't know, represent your interests, represent your clients' interests, et cetera, et cetera?
Put it another way, are you being legally bribed?
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And so the law firms and the legislators are supporting these, resisting these efforts. We found out earlier this week that the case is probably going to extend to March. A proposed order for the judge in Manhattan's Supreme Court, who will eventually be hearing all these cases, would put the court date in March, which is significant because it gives time for negotiation. This is a big separation of powers issue. And the last time state legislators went against the executive branch or went against a governor was over matters of budget rights in a case called Silver v. Pataki. And the legislators lost. And I think that they're still wary of that. They realize that was a big diminution of their position vis-a-vis the executive. I don't think anyone wants this case to go to trial. I think that we're going to see some sort of negotiated solution because Governor Cuomo knows that accomplishment, a half loaf properly spun, is better than no loaf at all.
Well, does he really? I'm so sorry, Rosemary. Jimmy, just following up on that, does he want to win is my question, or does he want the issue, as we say?
I think he wants to win. I think he wants the action because he knows that corruption in Albany paints negatively on everyone, himself included. When people see the government and they think, they're all bums, they're all corrupt, he is the most visible figure in that government. So he knows that there's at least some tarring that happens to him. And then the other thing that he
But doesn't
knows,
he get the issue? In other words, the moment he does the Moreland Commission, says, go after them. And by the way, Ken Lovett, your colleague for the Daily News, had this thing where Cuomo came in and said, no, don't subpoena those guys and don't subpoena those guys who I know.
Right.
At that point, it looked a little bit to me like maybe he wanted to be seen as the guy on the white horse going after them, but he wasn't necessarily want to embarrass anybody.
Well, I don't think he wants the issue. I think he prefers the resolution. And I'll tell you why, because he's got other things that he wants to do, right? He wants to cut taxes. He wants to be the guy who in an election year cut taxes and property taxes. And he's proposed a slew of ideas as to how to best do this. If he angers the legislators by pushing on this corruption matter, what are they going to do when his legislative program comes in front of them?
Aren't they angry at him already?
Sure, they're going to review it dutifully. Right?
Aren't they angry at him already?
I think the governor recognizes that it's in his best interest to come to some sort of negotiated solution. I have no reason to doubt that at the same time we see these sides gearing up for their court fights, everyone is trying to avoid that by coming to some sort of compromise.
Okay. Well, it's possible, and I'm sure you're very well informed. I mean that by no, no one. let the record show he stuck out his tongue at me.
Wow.
No, I'm sure you are, and I'm sure you have a lot of sources that give you that kind of information. I still think that here's a governor who has $30 million in his own account of campaign money. So, you know, if this thing really gets off the ground and they really start to go after everybody who's collected money from one group or another, it might prove embarrassing.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely the point. And that's the point legislators have made, which is, you know, let he who Let he who is without sin cast the first stone in this glass house that you live in, Governor.
Is there any hope, though, that Moreland Commission and all of this politicking and debating we're talking about bodes well for the future, that maybe we won't get the guys in the past to have done this, but there'll be fewer doing it in the future? Is there any hope of that?
You know, that's possible.
I'm
voting no.
You have to think about, you know, this is a larger idea, but let's think about what our bar is, right? Is our bar a perfect solution that we think is really going to completely shock the system? Maybe that is our bar.
What do you mean?
Is
our bar improvement? What do you mean bar?
The bar. Where do we set the bar?
The low bar? Well, look at these guys who they pulled in from the Senate. You know, almost everybody in the leadership there. I mean, not everybody, but almost everybody. And you say to yourself, how can these people continue to do this stuff when they know on any level, that on some level, that they're going to get caught? What makes them do that? Whatever it is the same thing that has made people on local school boards pull it, janitors, principals. Yeah. It's pure greed, and it won't stop.
Well, right. And so I guess to get to your point, Rosemary, I think there might be movement, then an improvement on the status quo. And frankly, the status quo has some things that are so ridiculous that it will be very easy to improve the status quo. Things like, for example, if you die and you're a legislator, your campaign account should probably do something. Maybe go to charity. Maybe go to your party.
What
that
happens to it now?
It should be in your will.
You can do whatever you want.
What happens to it now?
You can do whatever you want with it. Your campaign treasurer continues to control it in perpetuity.
Wow.
And the greatest example of that is Ron Stafford, the late senator from the North Country. I think 6 years, maybe we're 7 years after his death, his wife is still spending his campaign money, giving contributions to various people and officials. So I haven't really heard anyone defend that practice. There is also this idea of treating these legally licensed corporations as individuals. And this is a very controversial ruling of the Board of Elections.
The LLCs we see all over
the
place.
It's referred to as the LLC loophole. So I guess my point is the bar is so low. Right. The status quo is so
bad.
We expect so little.
The low hanging fruit is.
I don't think the bar has to be set at, you know, eliminate all corruption. As an investigative reporter, you know that the best you're going to get is you're going to stop one particular practice for right now. And then they're going to regroup and find another way to do what they want.
So to answer your question, yes, I think it's possible. And I would say it's likely that we will see some improvements on the status quo. Are we going to see a perfect, gorgeous, gleaming thing that the good government people who are here and who have been speaking for years say, hallelujah, hallelujah? Probably not.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I see governors who should know better in other states having their houses painted by convicts. Now, you know, I mean, at what point does somebody say, I'm going to get caught doing this kind of thing?
Right. I mean, they never think that. Again, as an investigative reporter, you will find, you know this, Jim, you will find guys doing the same old scams over and over again. How many times do you have to publish or look at travel expenditures when you're finding the same old scams going on?
See, Espada, Pedro. You know, this is a person who was essentially sort of run out of the Senate for having questionable ties and steering state money to a health clinic that his family ran and was paid very handsomely by. He's elected again, and sure enough, he continues to send state money to a health clinic that his family was, prosecutors alleged and convicted him on, was looting.
And he's smiling.
And we all knew about this.
Right, and he's smiling and giving press conferences till the day he walks into the Who's Gown.
Right. So
you
I don't know.
You this get is, the people right. you deserve.
So there's the larger issue about whether or not it's a psychological thing. And there's the point about, well, okay, is it the same drive that brings someone, you know, that brings Senator Shartok to say, me, I'm the best one. I should represent you. You know, that sort of ego.
Well, it goes back. It goes back to the voters and the readers of news media. They get who they deserve when they don't pay attention to that sort of thing, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do we all feel better that Dennis Rodman's going back to North Korea?
I do.
I don't think it's a bad thing.
Okay, why?
Because no other American is over there talking. The American government is taking the stand that he's doing this on his own and we don't know anything about it. I hope that that's not true. I hope they really are talking to him. We need information about what's going on there. And if Dennis Rodman has the ear of the president, why is that bad?
Which president?
the crazy president of North Korea. The guy who killed his uncle. You may have heard about him.
Oh, I heard about it.
And let me just point out to you that we are talking about North Korea today. That's the first international story we have done in a long time. We haven't mentioned Ukraine, which actually is a close ally of the United States. What's happening there is really important. Has to do with ties with Putin. We're not talking about that. We're talking about North Korea, and that's because of Dennis Rodman.
I do believe we've talked about the Ukraine,
maybe on a day I wasn't here.
It could be, you know. I mean, that's
you can talk about whatever you want. Well, you can come to the table and bring whatever issue you want.
Sure. Right now, listeners around the tri-state or however many state region are knocking on their heads against the walls and saying, Are none of you boxing fans? You take Dennis Rodman's celebrity from the NBA, but and I confess I'm not a boxing fan, but I believe there's the heavyweight champion of the world is now entering the Ukrainian political fray.
Yep.
Is he a Ukrainian?
Yes, he is.
Is it a she?
There's also people in the streets in Kiev,
right.
You know, standing up to Putin. But
fascinating story. It is.
It goes to the larger issue of what is the news diet of Americans,
right.
and how does a struggle in Ukraine? How does the fact that there are thousands of people demonstrating and ripping down statues of Lenin in Kiev?
Right.
How does that affect me? And you know, it's
and yet we'll talk about, you know, Dennis Rodman, who's kind of whose craziness matches the president of North Korea.
I don't even know. I mean, I guess the reasons for going over there are to teach basketball.
Ping pong, as you may remember. What started the great opening.
Alan, it's called public diplomacy, and you were just extolling it in the person of Carolyn Kennedy. We send our bright and beautiful Camelot princess to Japan. That's a good thing. So is sending our guy Dennis Rodman, who knows a little bit about basketball, to deal sports.
He's bright and beautiful?
No, but he's charismatic. He certainly knows the game. He's going to work with
Hall
young people. He is going to make Americans look good in North Korea. So how's that different from Carolyn over in Japan?
I'm shocked. I mean, I'm just shocked by that attempted comparison. I mean, one person has the ear of the president, is appointed by the president. The other one is an out-of-control missile.
I don't think there's evidence of that.
Okay.
What do we gain from it?
Well, I think I've said that. We get an eye and a person in North Korea who's talking about
is there permanent change that can come out of it?
Is there permanent change sending Carolyn Kennedy to Japan? No, that's not the name. Public diplomacy doesn't work that way. It's a slow, incremental exchange of views and persons. I worked in a newsroom. I worked in a newsroom in Algiers, and many reporters came up to me and said through interpreters, because we don't speak the same language, I hated Americans until I met you. It's because they never knew Americans. They never knew what we're like. They only know their propaganda.
That's my point.
And that's my point about Dennis Rodman. Same.
Right. I think we should. It's the voice of America. Only it's not radio being pumped over the Iron Curtain. It's Dennis Rodman playing basketball on state media.
Respectfully, I think it's an invidious comparison.
I wonder what Carolyn would say. I think she would like it.
The United States, which has no diplomatic relations with North Korea, had already advised that no American should travel there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, let's talk about State Department travel advisories. They say don't go any place where there's any trouble, because rightly so, you know, they want to cover their behinds. I mean, I can't tell you the number of places that I have gone to and am going to that have travel advisors, including Tunisia.
But when Forrest Gump went to play ping pong when the great ping pong team was sent, the government knew what they were doing.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I really hope that they have contacted and are working with Dennis Rodman. I understand the public statement saying, no, we have nothing to do with this. I hope that's not true.
Well, right. And, of course, I think history has shown that we do better on an international scale. We avoid conflict. We avoid a loss of life when we do talk.
Yeah,
so talking is good. Maybe
Sports.
If Dennis Rodman says, hey, Kim, you know, the U.S. media, they didn't really – They noticed when you killed your uncle.
Let's see.
You
after
should
he
probably think about that.
Let's see after he leaves whether they shoot another missile into the air.
Sports is a wonderful a tie between and among people. And if Dennis Rodman can help us in North Korea, certainly I don't think he can hurt us. We're kind of like enemies, right?
Oh yeah.
What
yes.
can he do?
We're at war, as a matter of fact.
Okay, so what can he do that's going to make things worse than they are? I see all pluses on this.
We're going to end there, and thank you for weighing in.
He stuck his tongue out at me. What is this, an epidemic?
Who did that?
Alan from Jimmy.
I was just clearing spinach from my
teeth. Wow, I'm just reading, and I'm not even aware of all of this.
You are all misbehaving.
Bickering going on. Oh, my goodness. Now that I have these blinders in front of the microphones, I can't see anything that's going on.
They can't see you either.
That's right. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, Rosemary, Jimmy, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
We'll be back after this break.